Mr. Paracetamol was coming off the sheriff having their celebration for their intended deed to the decree to destroy the Jewish, the whole Jewish population at that time, and they're having a celebration. So now we start Paris Dalin. Mordechai heard, he knew, he found out what happened, and even though it was supposed to be kept a secret, of course things leak out, and he went into mourning. Then he went out into the city and he cried, and then he went into the front gate of the king, Shai HaMelech. And all the Jews started mourning as well, fasting, crying, wearing sackcloth and ashes. Esther's servant, or some servant, came and informed her of the situation, of what was going on outside the palace. She tried to send Mordechai regular clothes so that she could actually have some kind of interaction with him. Now, you're not allowed to come in to the king's palace with such, you know, sackcloth, ashes, mourning clothes. But he refused to take the clothes. And it goes on that there are many reasons, but for right now, he refused to take this clothes. And instead, she then sends Hasach to Mordechai. Now, there are many descriptions of who he was, whether he was actually, Gemara says that he might have been Daniel. Let us just send him out. And Mordechai informs Hasach that he tells him everything that's happening, including the fact that Haman offered to pay, he offered to bribe, pay money to the royal treasury in order to get rid of the Jewish people. That's how extensive the hatred is. Then he gave instructions for Esther to go to the king and beg for mercy for the Jewish people. Hatach relates this Mordechai's message, and then Esther sends back a message to Mordechai saying, everyone in the land, there's 127 provinces, this is Hodu Ad Kush, everyone knows that any person who goes to the king without being summoned beforehand, he will be killed, with no exceptions, unless the king at that moment decides to put out his scepter, his royal gold scepter, which he doesn't usually do. And she says, I've not been summoned for 30 days. That's her message back to him. Mordechai replies back to Esther, and this is the key. This is Pasuk Yud Gimel Yudalin. I'd like to focus on this. Mordechai sends back, and he says, do you think that you will be saved from all the Jews because you are in the palace? If you remain still or silent now, relief and help will come to the Jews from another place. But you and your father's house will be destroyed. And who knows if it's not for this time, this moment that you became queen. He says that at the end of this pasuk, Miyodea, end of pasuk Yudalin, Miyodea im le'ez kazos higat l'machus. And who knows if it's not for this time that you became queen. Esther then responds to Mordechai saying, gather all the Jews in Shushan and fast for me for 3 days. I and my servants will also fast. Then I will go to the king in violation of the law. And if I perish, I perish. Avadati, avadati. That's at the end of Pasuk Tetzayin. The first two words and the last line on page 15. Avadati, avadati. Mordechai left the king's gate, the entrance to the gate, and did as Esther instructed. He went to call all the Jews in Shushan to fast. That's the parak in a paraphrase, in a nutshell, okay? I just want to lay it out. And if we could, just look at and analyze Esther and her situation, where she is in the world, what's going on with her. Up till now, we looked at her in terms of her midos and what she'd accomplished and who she was and how she got to the palace. And here she is in the palace. She's an orphan, as we know. She's been taken away without her rishus, without her desire, and she's alone in the palace, married to this barbarian who holds all the power, who he himself, the man that she's married to, has decreed to kill all the Jews, all her people, all her family, everyone. And at any moment, she knows he could kill her, just as he did to Vashti. He's fickle, he's finicky, he'll do whatever he wants at any moment. She lives in constant fear for her life, and now she lives in fear for all her people's lives. She's without family or friends. She has no one to talk to, no one to relate this to, no one to discuss this with, no one to lay out her feelings to. There's no Jews around her whatsoever. She has to keep even her identity a secret, her Jewishness a complete secret. All her mitzvot have to be kept alone and in secrecy. Ahalacha, Shabbos, Yentif. There's no simcha for her in her life. There's no sharing and joy in this situation. All communication with anyone of any significance to her has to be done through messengers and always at risk, both for her life and for their life. Any kind of contact whatsoever. So she's basically, she's alone. She's completely alone. Her life must be pretty terrible, dark, depressing, and very dead end. You know, very dead end when you think about this. And any moment, as soon, with this decree, you know, within 11 months, her entire people are going to be destroyed, and she doesn't know what will happen with her as well. Psychologically, she's like reliving this concept of orphanhood in a certain way. Like she's an orphan. An orphan feels very, very alone. And here she is, again, completely alone. And the future looks very bleak. And she can't mourn with them, and she feels helpless to help them. It's a combination of being alone and helpless. Now, the normal human reaction in such a situation is you can feel rejected, unwanted, bad, terrible. How did I get to this place? How did we get to this place? Every Jew on their own level in Shushan and in all the surrounding provinces is also feeling a certain rejection, but you can imagine hers as being intensely deep. And this normally leads to despair, anger, bitterness, you know, any of these, what? Assimilation.
No, it does.
It does. And actually, we'll get to that. That's one of the reasons later on.
One of the reasons.
Even someone in such a situation who's, you know, so great could also fall to to despair, to anger, bitterness, whatever. And she can feel, she normal feeling at this point would be, Hashem left me. Hashem left me. He left me. The Jews as a whole are feeling Hashem left them, because here they are, the calculations of the 70 years of the end of Galus didn't come to be, based on a wrong calculation, but a valid, realistic, this worldly type of calculation. They felt Hashem left them. She, on a deeper level, could feel left, hated, rejected. What did I do wrong in my life to bring me to this place? And this is feelings that all of us have, you know, in our little situation. You know.
On the other hand, there's no situation like that can enable a person to reach the closest. It's such a situation that, of course, she's not going to get this situation. She won't go into the special turn to Hashem.
Except that we do see here that she has a free will point, and Mordechai has to push her. We're going to get to that.
Uh-huh.
So we're going to see.
So I'm trying to say, so there's no type of situation like that. That there's no way out, only to turn to Hashem. You know what I'm trying to say? Like that. So such situations is when people start to become close to Hashem.
Or not. There's always choice. Every person has free will, but every person has free will. So even she, on her madriga, okay, she's on a different madriga. Maybe she's not going to go into despair or into assimilation or whatever, but is she going to go beyond that? So you're right. This is the person we're going to get to here.
It's either you shape up a ship. But
on her madriga, she has a certain place to get to, which is different than what that another person. But we're going to go through that. But what you're saying is true. Every situation, as we're going to see, is the best possible situation for that person to grow, to accomplish their task, to move. But the question is whether they're going to do it or not. And every situation has the opposite opportunity. She did feel alone. So we'll go on, actually, hopefully next week we'll talk about that. When she walks down the hallway towards Ahasuerus, there's a whole thing about what she's going through internally as she's walking down that hallway when she feels Hashem is left. Anyway, this Nisayon of hopelessness, aloneness, fear, this is a Nisayon that, in Esther, it's the quintessential example. In each Jew at this time, they're going through it. And this is something that each individual goes through at every at different points in their own life. And the Jewish people through history also have gone through this. And I just want to relate two examples to show you that it's a real Nisayon that HaKadosh Baruch Hu put into the world, and there's real options. When Klal Yisrael were in the desert in Bishalach, after the Yom Suf, and they're traveling through the desert, and now they have no water and no food, right? And they start complaining. And the Lashon is Vayalinu. They complain. Bitter water, we're hungry, we're thirsty, we want food. They're testing and they're quarreling with Amalek. And what happens, as we learned in the last two classes, they're quarreling with Hashem, and what happens? I'm sorry. They're testing, they're quarreling with the Kodesh Baruch Hu about this, they're complaining. Vayalinu, and that brings Amalek. Okay, the next time, the same Lashon, Vayalinu is, in Shlach. They have a Shalach and now they have Shlach. The Meraglim return from Eretz Yisrael and they complain and they say, they report terrible out there, the giants, this, that, the other, all the negativity and about the land. The same Lashon, it says Vayalinu. Exactly the same Lashon. And what happens after that? Amalek. We have a war with Amalek. Okay? Later on, they decide, it's complicated. The Meraglim. Right. They go back to Klal Yisrael, and Klal Yisrael, most Klal Yisrael then complain. They said, if this is what the Meraglim tell us. Well, actually what happens was Klal Yisrael says, that time Klal Yisrael says, oh, well, we made a mistake, let's go fight anyway. And Moshe says, no, you can't, you missed your chance. They go and they blow it. Okay. So then, in Divine, which you know, Divine is a, in many ways, a summary of what happened to Klal Yisrael throughout. So in Divine, Moshe rebukes Klal Yisrael. It's not written in Shlach, but Moshe rebukes Klal Yisrael, referring to that incident, and he says, you sat in your tents and complained. You said, HaKadosh Baruch Hu's hatred of us led him to take us out of his line and into the desert to kill us here. This is Divine Pasuk Aleph, Perek Aleph Pasuk Chaf Zayin, if you want to look at it. It says specifically, Hashem's hatred of us led him to take us out of Mithraim into the desert to kill us here. That's how they twisted and misinterpreted HaKadosh Baruch Hu's taking out of Mithraim. Now this is Klal Yisrael in the desert. We're talking high madrigas. We're talking people, big people. Okay, and even at that level, they looked at it in the negative. Mm-hmm. See, they saw rejection. In this moment of difficulty, people often feel and see rejection. And then they reinterpret history. They reinterpret Hashem, and they see him negatively. And this is common as a klal. This is common on an individual level, you know. And then you can see it. You know, people come, go crazy. They come to Eretz Yisrael. They come here. It's hard, and they, you know, Hashem's not here. He doesn't love me, or whatever it is, or in a person's own little personal life.
But it's a thin line between going this way or that way, and there's only one thing that, according to my very limited way of thinking, there's only one solution, and that is the solution. And if you do it, it works. At that moment, you turn to Hashem. It's all very simple. It's all very different. It's
simple in concept. It's right. Hard in actuality. Mm-hmm. And it wouldn't be hard.
It's in such a situation, such intensity, and such brokenheartedness, and such despair, and such. If they're turning to Hashem, the feel of the Messiah, right away, I would assume, according to my limited understanding again, is that you see instant result. You see the Hashkacha right away. You know what I'm trying to say?
I know what you're trying to say, but it's the MS. What you're saying is the MS.
Yeah.
But Hashem made this Messiah difficult for a reason. Yeah. It's not, and he gave free will. It's not an automatic. If it was automatic, we wouldn't be here. Wouldn't be in the Zion if we automatically went that way.
But did you also know that process, that Lama, why did it take us in order to sin us Hashem? It says over this, I think it says Lama. And the question is like that. If the person asks, like, why did this happen to me? We usually ask, like, in a bad situation, why did this happen to me? And there's two ways of asking why. Why did this happen to me? Like, I don't want this. It's a, you know, some. Idiot wrote a book about that. Why do good things? Okay, in any case, why? And there's another way to ask Lama, which is M is Lama. 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 Why? For what reason? And that's the Masa. A person has been in the fast place of Masa. Say, why? For what reason did this happen? What am I supposed to draw from this situation? Why is this for me? What is this for me? And that's the real way of asking why, instead of saying, why this happened to me, but Why? What, for what reason?
But how can we find out? But there must be, and even if, it's just I heard Rabbi Kirzner play on that, but I don't want to go into too much detail. Rabbi Kirzner once said that he had a series of break-ins in his house. He lived in Borough Park, and they moved in, and then over the winter, if you remember this, he had a series of small break-ins, nothing major, major, but a few. And it was scary for the children who had moved from, you know, California, and, you know, and there they were in New York, you know, so. And it was very scary. So they said that they did a cheshbon nefesh, he and his wife, Rebbe Kirzner, and they couldn't come up, he said, with something specific. So they picked something they thought was, it didn't exactly relate. He said, sometimes you don't know, and you can't really, really know, and also you're not going to really, really know what the truth is, but almost that's okay, as long as you start working on something. But that's a whole other thing. But I want to go into this a little bit more deeply, is that it must be a nisayon, and it is human nature, just like it's human nature. Ka'as is human nature. Desire for materialism is human nature. All the things that, you know, all these traits are human nature. And it must be that a Kosh Baruch Hu wants us to work out of them. It doesn't mean that they don't happen. It must be that they happen. And if Hashem is showing us through Tanakh, through the Chumash, that it happens, then it happens. And we're talking about the Nisim of Klal Yisrael, who were the Meraglim. They sent the Nisim, they didn't send, you know, Joe Schmo, they sent the top. And if they could fall into such a place, and it's a human place to fall when you're in the Nisayon. So I just want to go on that. But the idea is that
I just wanted to add that I just heard a tape of Amnon Yitzchak was speaking about the Gulf War. He was speaking during the Gulf War, and he said that, like, the first thing Hashem does, he sends the Nagarians, first he sends the warning, then he sends the Nagarians to the buildings, and he said now the buildings are, you know,
what
is that,
the Nagarians,
like a pesta, like a wound, to the wound to the building.
So first he gave the warning, there's going to be the war. Then now the scouts are coming and breaking the houses. So now we have to do children that it shouldn't come to on the go. I mean,
you know, I'm going to say something. I broke my leg about 7 years ago, and I remember calling up Everton Heller and asking her, what happened to me? Why? So I was very good with Everton Heller in those days. So she said, well, I'll tell you three things. I only remember two. I wrote them down, so it's somewhere in there. The first was that, just to prove to a person how helpless we really are, and that you, without Hashem, you're nothing. And the second thing is that not to think of where did my feet go wrong, where did my hands go wrong, what did I do wrong, did I run the wrong place, because I was referring to the foot. So she says, it's not your business. Maybe it was something that you did in a different gilgal that you have to fix now. So there's so many cheshbonos before and after. And it's not our concern. We just have to do the right thing.
And there are so many cheshbonos. Hashem can do one thing and it take care of a million different things
at once.
You know, like it's...
The third thing I
think of. What Rabbi Zimmerman says on a thing like that, he says that you've got to think about every time that you fell and you didn't hurt your foot, or all the time that your foot was.
The other foot, yes. Baruch Hashem for the other foot. And Baruch Hashem, I didn't fall on my head.
So I want to
That's what I said.
I want to take what you're saying and continue, because it's exactly the next point in this, is that their Klal Yisrael was twisting and distorting what a Kadosh Baruch Hu did for them by taking them out of Mitzrayim.
Right.
And what was Yitzias Mitzrayim? It was completely out of love that Kadosh Baruch Hu took us out of Mitzrayim to make us His people, to make us His royal family, to give us freedom and the freedom to serve Him completely, and to be an exclusive relationship with Hashem. He wanted us exclusively. His whole reason for taking us out was not to make us suffer in the desert, was to give us this one-on-one loving relationship. And if you think of the Seder night, which B'ezrat Hashem will be soon, all of the Seder night is Akaras HaTov, Hodu LaHashem Ki Tov, Ki Li Olam Chasdo. But instead of seeing the love of Hashem, they distorted and they saw Yitzias Mitzrayim and Eretz Yisrael as an expression of hate. The exact opposite. They said, Hashem must hate me. God's hatred must let us take us out of Mitzrayim. How does this happen? So it says that the Yetzirah, one of the names of the Yetzirah is Sina. The Gemara brings down that one of the names is Sina, hatred. And this hatred causes us to misinterpret actions and distort our perceptions. And it's not just hatred that I hate someone else. It can be hatred from within. I feel hated. I feel hated by Hashem. I feel hated by other people. And ultimately, one of the words is I hate myself. And you start to doubt your own self-worth. Mm-hmm. You doubt another person's intentions. You doubt a Kodesh Baruch Hu's intentions. And this internal hatred is what brings a person to that incredible low self-confidence, which we saw in Ahasuerus and Haman, that they misinterpret everything. They interpret everything to be whether it's their inner kavod or not. And this doubt about one's inner self, one's inner worth, leads to all that paranoia, fear, anger, anxiety, bitterness, depression, boredom, apathy, all the rest of them just come rolling in. Right? They just have a good place to go. And what comes out in that ultimately is nothing really matters. And that's where you get all that assimilation. Nothing. You get to like an apathy of nothing matters. If Hashem hates me, the best way for me to go is, oh, it doesn't matter. And I can kind of run away from the whole thing. You know, I'll just run
that's
away.
That's a very important word. It doesn't matter. So people use that as a scapegoat. Yeah, it doesn't matter. What difference does it make if I do it? What difference does it make if I say it? So what? It's just me. It's just this. It's nothing. Like,
that's what you're
and that's exactly what Amalek is. Nothing. It doesn't matter. There's nothing out there except, you know, what I do, what I see, what I want, how I want life. You know, I'll take it. I'm going to go for the gusto and I'm finished. And it doesn't matter. Whatever else happens, you know, it doesn't matter. That's why Hitler could do what he wanted. I mean, if there's nothing matters. When you feel that hatred, you can't take it, and you feel your own inner self, unself-worth. So then you have to build it some other, or enjoy, or do something.
I don't understand. What do you mean by this?
Hitler could make up his own rules, his own game, because there's no consciousness, there's nothing else out there. There's no God in the picture, there's no anything else's feeling. There's no sense of love or inner place that I have an inner chashivas, and you have an inner chashivas, and she has an inner chashivas, and the world has a chashivas, the world has a purpose. It's like, oh, there's no purpose, there's nothing out there, there's no reason. It's an apathy that takes you into...
But didn't you say
that's what he's trying to create.
From the lowness, he's so low that he wanted to prove that he's destroying the whole world, and now it's be the case.
Look at Haman. He has one, he's got everything, he's got it all right now.
He's got money,
he's got... you know, people bowing, pairing status, you know, people prostrating on the ground for him, you know, free entry to the king, you know, whatever he wants.
And
one guy doesn't bow to him, he can't take it.
And he's free.
What are you going to say?
No, I'm sorry, I just read something that so applies to this. The question is, in Mitzrayim, the Nesra were told to keep a secret about 12 months before the Yitzhak Mitzrayim that they're going to go and ask their neighbors, the Mitzrayim, to give back a material thing. Moshe went, Hashem told him to tell this. Why did he do that 12 months before? Why not right before? Because Hashem wanted to test them to see if they could be faithful. Faithful meaning they could keep a secret. Mm-hmm. So why is this the reason for redemption? Because if you can keep your own secret, then that means you have trust. And if you have trust, you can trust in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He was saying that in terms of Avraham Avinu and Moshe Rabbeinu, he chose all of our others for their being Neman. So the character trait that's so kosher that we wish people that are married for is to build a bias Neman. Why doctor that on a thing? Because that's the basis for Avodas Hashem. If you're faithful for yourself, if you believe in yourself, via Kodesh Baruch Hu, then you're able to keep all the mitzvahs and have the dedicated to him. So in Salma, that's first, it's sort of we have to develop it in ourselves and then we can go on from there.
That's right.
Esther proved that she was faithful. That was a big...
That a big, one big, of her big,
big
part of her
job,
test.
Exactly.
Right. Inner trust. Yeah. Inner...
So that's what you're saying, but the Midbars, they didn't trust themselves.
Right, they didn't trust themselves. They trust Kadosh Baruch Hu. So, I'm going to go on from there to say that this negative interpretation of life, negative Kadosh Baruch Hu ultimately leads to negative or destructive behavior. That's where it takes us. It's a negative, destructive behavior. And on a personal level, like you say, let's say you can take even something like a bad mood. Like you wake up in a bad mood. Okay, it happens. That's the way it is, right? But what happens? Right, we're the opposite of it. What happens when someone has a bad mood? They sense that the world is a negative place. like bad things are happening. Oh, the sun's shining. Oh, I wish, you know, I'd like it to be dark. It's going to be too hot. You know, it's raining. Oh, I have to go out in the rain. Whatever the situation is, it's negative. You know, bad things are happening to me. And this internal, this like bad things are happening to me, it's like a vicious cycle. I see the world as bad, so bad things are happening. Bad things are happening, it must mean that I'm a bad person, or I'm bad, or I didn't this, or I didn't that. And that internal bad makes me feel like unhated, and then we go on from there to like, it goes out externally to hatred or paranoia or ultimately apathy, you know, or all the other things. And like someone said, like bitterness. The meter of bitterness is one of the worst meters that a person could really have, because they interpret everything negatively. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if love comes to them; they can't receive it because they're going to twist it and look at it in a bitter light, and eventually destroys your faith, faith in yourself, faith in the Kodesh Baruch Hu, and faith in other people. Like you said, there's no trust. So this, then you go back into the doubt. Amalek has won because you doubt Hashem, you doubt His love, you doubt His intentions. You doubt other people's intentions. You doubt the world. And as when I think about it, like you know, young couple when they get married, and everything's like rosy and nice, and you feel like person, you know, so excited about you, so excited about them. And then the first time the person does something, maybe inadvertently, maybe purposely, maybe ignorantly, you know, for whatever, just something, and it hurts you for whatever reason. Immediately the doubt of their intention.
He doesn't love me.
You know, he doesn't love me. Whatever. And that's where the negative. You know, the spiral goes down, a negative downfall spiral, what's the word? Anyway, and, you know, as opposed to, okay, they did this, does not mean they're there, for I'm rejected. There's a separation between, you know, what they're doing and how I feel. I may feel this way, but doesn't mean that it's necessarily true. You can have your feelings and say, you know, I have to deal with this feeling, but doesn't mean what they did is negative. Because Baruch Hu, that Kaisha was in the desert, and they were hungry, and there wasn't food and water. But it doesn't mean that Hashem was rejecting them. Just like you broke your leg. Maybe Hashem was loving you more at that moment. You know, and He was, the truth is, because He wanted something out of you. He wanted something out of you.
I got an article in my pocket. Very long article. Can you read it?
I'm sorry.
Let me read it. I have it.
In other words, you have a feeling. I'm sorry about it.
Right.
But it doesn't mean
that's happening.
What I did something not fair.
Mm-hmm.
But I am sorry.
That you feel it. It's recognizing the feeling.
There's a feeling.
That's beautiful.
But it's not really Dr. Emerson.
What?
What's the feeling of Dr. Emerson? I said, when we were kids, we used to say to my mother sometimes, not always, okay, it's not fair, this one got more, this one got less, or why didn't you take me, you know, whatever kids do, right? And we were, oh, Hashem. So my mother, I remember at least once or maybe one time, she used to say to us, I'm sorry you said to me, I didn't say, maybe not everyone complained, I'm sorry you feel that way. In other words, yes, you feel that way. And I'm sorry that you
acknowledge your feelings.
Right? But it doesn't mean that I wasn't being fair. You understand? What Chava's saying is, listen, it's true. Let's say something happened. You didn't get to go on the field you wanted to go to. It doesn't mean that it wasn't good for you, or you didn't get to go, you had a, whatever it is. Whatever happened to you, it's true it happened.
Just taking a few points. How does this happen, and how does one sink to that place? So one, as you said, is seeing, one point I will make is seeing life out of context. When you live in a piece, in just a slice of life, then, and you can't, you don't see the bigger picture, or you stop in that moment, like you wake up in a bad mood, so you see a slice of life, or you break your leg, you're seeing a slice of your life at the moment, I broke my leg. Then you're seeing life out of a whole context. When they were in the desert and they saw life at that moment, hungry and thirsty, they saw life in that moment. They forgot all the plagues. They forgot coming out of the Mitzrayim. They forgot Kriyas Yam Suf. They forgot singing on the side of the Yam. They forgot all of that, because at that moment, we see in a moment. And the truth is, that's human nature to see in a moment. But we are supposed to go above human nature and see the big picture. And in fact, what they say, Rega, right? Rega is a moment. And Rega is the first letter, Reshi Tevas, of Reshi's Goyim Amalek, which we talked about last week. Reshi's Goyim Amalek, Rega. It's seeing life in the moment. There's nothing before, nothing after, not the bigger picture. And Jewish life through Jewish history is full of a Kaddish Baruch Hu's weaving in and out and bringing us somewhere, right? And you can see it in your own life. You can see it in life through your grandparents, you, your children. You can see it through Klal Yisrael's life, through world history life. But it's seeing, and I'll get to it more later, but seeing, know that in the moment when we feel this kind of bitterness, anger, hatred, apathy, it's seeing life at the moment. Like a husband and wife, the husband does something wrong at that moment. The wife, at that moment, it's like, well, forget all the other crazy things that they've done for you. You know, you throw it out the window. You know, but it's, or your friend, or a parent, you know, like the teenage kid whose parent says, no, you can't have this. So they forget their parents diapered them all those years and, you know, fed them and loved them and kissed them. And no, at that moment, they wouldn't let them have this thing. So suddenly the parent is the worst possible enemy. It's like seeing things in a moment, Rega, Reshis Goyim Amalek. The second thing is like, if again, it's not seeing, which is part of this, is not seeing good and not having an Ayin Tov, have Karis Tov to Kodesh Baruch Hu. That of all the good things that Hashem has done for me till now, this must also be good. And I just want to mention one thing. Maybe you could turn off the tape for a second. Just for a second. That, I mean, anyway, the third thing is that the third thing about this is seeing the meaningfulness in life. Is seeing that they're real, like this idea from a Karas HaTov, from seeing a big picture, from seeing a Karas HaTov, brings us to see that life is meaningful. Life has a deeper meaning, the opposite of apathy. So in other words, you can take two roads in this trip through life. You can feel bad about what happens to you, and you can feel hurt or whatever it is, and then take that hurt and turn it into either I must be bad, go in the negative road, I must be bad, you know, and that leads to either anger, bitterness, or apathy, you know, whatever, goes into all the way down the negative road towards Amalek, or you can take it up on a higher road. But you have choices, and it's not easy. You have choice to say, this happened to me, but there's a bigger picture here. There's all that Kodesh Baruch Hu has done for me and continues to do for me, or a certain person does for me and continues to do for me, whether it's in a relationship with yourself. And that leads you back up to seeing that there's meaning in life, there's a purpose, there's something, bigger picture going on. And this is what's happening with Purim. There's a bigger picture going on, even though the situation looks and feels terrible, scary, frightening, horrendous. But there is a solution in here. There is a way to go. Now, I just wanted to bring out one point that we talked about and how to achieve this is Esther is very, very alone. Right? Esther is very alone in this situation. Mm-hmm. Now this aloneness creates a person to can feel hated or bitter or rejected. But the opposite can happen depending on how one takes it. So for example, if you look at Moshe in the palace, Moshe also grew up in the palace alone. Any of his interaction, we know, had to be via some other way. He couldn't go out and live with Klal Yisrael. He was really alone in the palace. Now, there's a reason that Kadosh Baruch Hu made him grow up alone in the palace. The reason Esther is alone in the palace. There's a reason why all the Avos were called shepherds. But they had to be out, it says, out in the mountains or out in the hills or out in the whatever, alone with the sheep. Right? David. They had to go get David from the sheep when Shmuel came to anoint him. They had to go find him. His father basically had, in some level, rejected him as being one of the possible possible sons that could be anointed. You know, after school went through all the sons, he said, you've got to have somebody else here. He said, no, nobody else. You have to go and follow him. Now, Dudley could definitely have felt very rejected out there from family, from his chashivas, from being part of Clydesdale, and from being out there alone with the sheep.
He did feel rejected. He probably turned to Hashem.
So the question is, aloneness, that
brings
you can take that aloneness and build a relationship with Hashem. You can build in that place. And sometimes alone is the only place to build, when you are alone. And sometimes we go into an alone place because of circumstances. And sometimes there's an alone place that that because of pain or suffering. You can actually be in the middle of a million people and be very alone. And they say that in pain, nobody else can go there with you in that place of pain. It's just called that mishma. People can sympathize. And they can kind of relate, but they can't go right into your pain. They can't go right in there with you. But who can go in there with you?
Yeah,
HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Rav Tzedek HaKohen often talks about the fact that if you can take Hashem with you down into that depth of pain, then you are accessing the Kadosh Kadoshim. You are accessing a place that only one person is allowed to go to. That is, we know the Kohen Gadol, but each person can be a Kohen Gadol in their own inner chamber with a Kadosh Baruch Hu. And it says that you actually enter the Kadosh Kadoshim of a Kadosh Baruch Hu when you take him with you into that tiny place, that small, narrow, just completely alone place with a Kadosh Baruch Hu. You can take him in there with you, then you can take him any place in life. And Hashem wants to go there with you. He knows what you're feeling. He put you there. He knows exactly what it feels like, what it is like, what the situation is, what the ramifications are, everything. He knows it, and he wants to be there with you. And sometimes that's the place we grow the most with the Kadosh Baruch Hu, is in that alone place. Instead of putting him out and saying, well, I'm rejected. You rejected me, so I'm rejecting you. Instead of doing that, it has to go the opposite, that you know it's painful, that you feel your pain. And instead of trying to work it all out, well, that's like another time, in another place. It's the word that I do, and da-da-da, and lama. That's another place. But the place is just being in the pain with you and Hashem, feeling your own pain, feeling that instead of brushing it out or phasing it out or getting rid of it, it's just taking Hashem in there with you. And they say psychologically, also, if you're actually in the pain, then it starts to abate. But only if you get there. Only if you really get there, instead of, you know, finding a million ways to get around it. And a million ways to get around it sometimes is apathy or bitterness or hatred or anger.
That's
denial. We have a lot of great ways to get around it. But sometimes it's going to come back when you try to do those other places. Maybe not this year. Maybe not this week. Maybe not this moment. But once you go into it and bring a shirt into it, then it's going to wash out. And you come out with Hashem. You come out walking with Hashem. And I don't have words for what it is, but that's aloneness with Hashem that can switch things to the positive. But it's not human natural to go that way. But you know, it's not natural. You know, we fight it.
You wouldn't say it's Jewish natural? In other words, the others gave it to us, and they endowed us with those possibilities to a great degree. But wouldn't you say that there's a nekuda in ourselves which is so naturally go there if you let it?
Right.
If you let it. Look at all the protection.
But once you find it, then you've unlocked it.
It's
and once you've unlocked it, then it's there.
It's frightening.
That's the
natural. Very frightening to go into the pain.
What
much easier to go into denial. It's much easier to get mad.
We also have other sides of us.
The fear of the pain is very, very deep.
It's in us. That's the inner nekuda that a Kadosh Baruch Hu wants us. But we have outer layers, like the onion.
Right.
Allow layers to peel off. And it's hard. Our task to keep it here is not easy. It's not sort of there. It's easy. But it's definitely there. The potential, the possibility, the genes are in us to do it. But a staff can be used like to walk up a mountain and use it to guide you, or you can smack, you know. Sometimes we have to smack. So let's go back to Esther. What's going on with her? she's, this whole situation plays itself out with Mordechai and Esther. The Jewish people are in a terrible state, and so is Esther herself. Esther's in the most extreme of this state. She's requested to go into the king and try to save them. She has very good Lamaisa reasons not to go in there. She has good reasons,
Solid reasons.
You know, she's fighting for her own life. Everybody, we have a desire for survival, okay? You cannot ever deny that. She's fighting for her own life. Anyway, she also feels that an opportune time might come later. If she hadn't been called for 30 days, she thinks, I might be called pretty soon. And this, you know, we've got another 11 months, right? We've got, this is now Nisan. We've got to Adar. Okay, why rush in there?
Why risk your life first?
Right, let's perfect sense.
She didn't trust Mordechai?
She's in the palace. Mordechai's sending her a message. She's looking at things from a different perspective.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Mordechai, right?
Another 11 months.
We got 11 months. Let's
She's
figure
practical.
Out.
She's practical. She's a woman. She's more practical.
Yeah. She has her opinion, right? You're allowed to discuss your opinion, right? Okay.
I thought that she would trust him more.
She's got an opinion. She's in the palace. She has certain access to information, to situations. She's relating her situation. If she dies now, if he kills her now, what's going to be left for the Jewish people? Okay? What if he decides, finish, he killed Vashti. Okay?
She knew that life has no meaning
Wait,
to
but
her.
He's Bas Tor, isn't he?
Mordechai's
Bas Tor. It's like Bas listening to Bas Tor, no?
But she's inside the palace, and she's
in the middle. You go to ask the child.
Maybe
that's what I'm saying.
Maybe he's missing a certain...
He's playing with him. You know, there's other factors here, whatever. What if this? What if that? You know, if she's, she's also, let's say, you know, there were first that said that she was married to him. Okay, as his wife, you know, she's giving another perspective, another opinion, another aspect. And they're trying to have this discussion via the messenger.
Okay, if she was his wife, if she mentioned him, that she'd be willing to have
Yeah, that's a very good
husband.
She's losing her husband.
She'd be losing her husband before she was
And she'd be halachically.
She was four.
And there's some halacha that says that basically she would be, at that point, she would be leaving her husband and, while she's, you know, to another man. And there's very many reasons that many of the stories didn't especially bring down why she had valid reasons to say that, you know, we've got 11 more months, maybe something else will happen, maybe let's look at this option and this option, let's investigate. And he tells her not to wait. And he has his salary, he says, don't wait. And Man Lewis says that the Jews were sinking lower and lower into despair, that you said before. They were becoming very despairing. Here they thought the 70 years are up, where's the Kodesh Baruch Hu? Now things are just getting worse. And if this king wants to kill all the Jews in one day, then where's the Kodesh Baruch Hu? We must be terrible. We're going to despair. Many were leaving Yiddishkeit. They figure we got 11 months. Let's, you know, assimilate. By the time he's going to come to kill us, they won't know who we are anymore. So we're going to be alive. Okay?
Is that the Rabbi
Man Lowe brings that in?
Is that the later on the converted? Rabbi Mehameh and Messiah?
Where are they from? They're from later.
They were good. And they were Messiah. And they came back.
They were also thought that. If they delay too long, then the furthest region of the kingdom might not be saved. In other words, if they delay too long, then message and by the time it gets to other areas of the kingdom, they may not be saved because it's a huge kingdom. And he says to her, you know, Esther, if you're in favor of the king now, if you're in favor now, okay, you might have an in now that later on you might not have. Right now the king loves you, and we know it. What if, you know, he changes his mind, like with Vashti, and he decides to kill you anyway for some other reason, then you've lost your chance. And then he says, something could happen to me. It's Mordechai. I'm your only connection to Jewish people. You know, Haman, who we know, hates me. Something could happen to me, and you will not be able to help us. You'll be unable. So he's giving her his reasons. But these are, this is what Nimrod brings down. So convincing. Mordechai has shown her that Esther, the meaning of life, that she has a purpose in her position, right? And she has to take the courage to have Zrizus to act now. And he's reminding her that there's a bigger picture in the world, that life has two levels, two paths. Hashem has the world going through a certain path, that the world is going to go. It's going to go through this path. No matter what we as individuals do, the world is going to go along this path. Parallel to this path is an individual's path in life. Now, they can either connect or not. Now, Hashem can make that life connect through a person's positive behavior or a person's negative behavior. Each person has free will to join the master plan or not join the master plan, or Hashem can have them join the master plan through a negative way. Like Hitler. Hitler is a big part of Hashem's master plan in the world. Haman is a big part of Hashem's master plan in the world. But Hashem is using them through the negative. Right? Now, a person can also choose to be part of that master plan or fade out. They can assimilate and fade out, or they can fade out through a million other ways. For example, Yosef and his brother. Right? His brother has made a decision, a halachic decision, that Yosef shouldn't be part of this shvati. And they sold him off. Okay, what happened? That selling him off ends up being how Klal Yisrael is brought to Mitzrayim, etc., etc. The big picture, they were part of that huge picture, and Yosef, and they chose not to be. But Hashem worked through them, through their negative traits, right? Through, there was deep, deep down that negative trait, but Hashem worked through them, and they ended up being. That was the reason, and Yosef said to them, I'm telling you, you're the reason I got here. I'm telling you, the reason I got here. They couldn't believe it. They couldn't believe it. To them, it was a shock. And there's a beautiful story of Miriam and Amram. When Amram decides to separate from Yocheved, right? And after Aaron and Miriam are born, and then there's the decree of Paro to completely wipe out all the Jewish boys, to kill each one. So Amram, who is the Gadol, he says, we have to separate. We can't have boys being killed. We can't bring babies into the world to be killed. So everybody then takes the lead, goes on from the lead that Amram set, and they separate. And Miriam, a young girl, says to her father, you can't separate. And here you say, you know what, Esther can't go to Mordechai and relate how she... No, his daughter says to her father, you can't separate from your wife.
The decree is only on the boys.
The decree is only on the boys. You are then decreed that the girl should also die. And she says, and who knows if Mashiach might come from your union. She says this. The Medrash brings down, who knows if Mashiach might come from your union. Wow. Here's a little girl telling her father, this is a situation. And she, it says, Medrash says that she, oh, so later on it says in B'Shalach, it says that, Tikach Miriam and Neviah, the sister of Aaron, she takes the symbol in her hand. Kol hanashim betupim. Later on it says, kol hanashim betupim, with tupim, with symbols. But it says, hata biyada. When Miriam takes hata, the symbol, it should have said,
it says,
and then it brings down, what taf was this? It's the one when Yocheved and Amram remarry, and they had chasana, whatever, and she used this taf to celebrate, and she brought that taf with her to the Yom Suf. The taf. The other women had tupim. Other women had their stam tupim that they took. This is the taf. It doesn't say ba tupim for the nashim. It doesn't say ha, but for her it was that one. She had Miriam saw the big picture. She thought this, you know, we can't just end all the children. We have to look at the picture. And who knows if Mashiach won't come out of this? And what happened? Mashiach comes out of this picture. She saw the bigger picture, and she became a partner in the process of the world. She became a partner with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. She, in herself, became a partner with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Through her emunah, through her clarity of vision, seeing the big picture, seeing HaKadosh Baruch Hu and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, there's life, there's future, there's meaning in the world.
Just going back to what you said, her vision made her personal path intersect with the world path. That's
exactly. Her personal path through through good and her free will choice, became partners with the Kaddish Baruch Hu's path of the world. And each of us have that option. There's a Kaddish Baruch Hu's path. This world is going to go on. The Jewish people are going to go on. Things are going to happen. And we can choose to be part of that path. We can choose to be part of that path with the good, or we can be antipathy. Oh, the word is empathetic, whatever. Empathetic.
Adishim.
You know, and we can have nothing to do with past, or Hashem can work through us through the negative. And like it says at the end of days, you know, Hashem's going to go to the Goyim and say, what did you contribute? And each Goy says, well, I made a bridge, and I made a skyscraper, and I made radios, and I made telephones.
Computer.
For Klal Yisrael, for them. So, you know, you made it for yourself. I used it for Klal Yisrael for you. But you made it for yourself. So here's Esther. There's a divine master plan, Hashem's plan for the world. There's our personal life, okay, and there's our personal life. Esther, in the Megillah, Esther is scared for herself, scared for Klal Yisrael, petrified, frightened. Okay, Mordechai says, perhaps you were chosen to be queen just for this moment. L'eit hazeh, because he got to the Malchus, l'eit kazot. Miyodei, in l'eit kazot, he got the Malchus. Who knows, for at this moment you didn't come to be queen. And it says before that, it says,
This is in the Megillah.
Perak Dalet, Pasuk Yud Dalet. It says, maybe, if you're quite, maybe, at this time, Revach Metzalah, Salah, the freeing, will come to the Yehudi Mimakom Acher, from a different place. The Ba'at, Beit Avich Tovedu, and you and your father's house will be destroyed. Now, what does this mean? Her father is dead, right? She's an orphan. Okay? She's an orphan. She's not going to father's house. What is this? Esther, we know, is of Benjamin. Esther is actually a direct descendant of Shaul. She's a descendant of Shaul. What did Shaul do? Do you remember that? She's from Shevet Benjamin. Mm-hmm. Descendant of Shaul. Mm-hmm. Where? What happened? Shaul did not
destroy
the Malchus, right? We know that Esther is actually really a Malchus. She's from the house of Shaul. What happened? He did not kill off Amalek. He did not finish the job. You talk about the Gilgulim. Here is Esther.
Right.
She has
finished it. Wow.
He got the Malchus. She became into the queen. She became queen. And she really already is queen. She really is from Amalek. She is Bas Yisrael. She is Bas of a king, actually. And she was put into the house of the king.
To finish the job.
Wow. She has a chance. Here is her. So each person has divine. There's Hashem's divine plan for the world. There's Hashem's divine plan for you.
Wow.
For each one of us. And she has, by joining up with the divine plan of the world, she will be able to complete the divine plan of her house. Of her household, of her generation, and become divine plan of all of Klal Yisrael, and the divine plan for her personally on her own level. Okay, this is her. She's been given the opportunity by Kaddish Baruch to complete the job. There is a greater meaning here besides she, her own life, besides her house of her generation, besides of all of Klal Yisrael. It says Am Yisrael Chai. They're going to continue. This divine plan will continue. And you can choose to be part of it or not part of it. And then Hashem will choose to let you go, assimilate, go wherever, or work through you in the negative. That's Hashem's going to work. But Hashem's giving us each free will to choose. And Esther has a chance for her personal tikkun of her family tikkun, generations tikkun, and an opportunity to tikkun for the entire Jewish people and demolish Ra in the world. Not just Jewish people, but the world. She can help the world get rid of Ra. It's not just that here's Jewish people, but our topic in the world is to bring good into the world, to the whole world. And here, through her one action now, she could actually bring good to the entire world. And there's a tikkun for other nations now we're talking about. Here's 127 provinces, the entire civilized world. Okay? The source of Ra, Rosh Hashanah, Amalek, will be wiped out. Okay.
The entire civilized world was
at that time.
At that time, most of the civilized world was under Ahasuerus. Most. There was some little barbaric whatever in there, but Pas and Medes had joined. This is the end of Babylonian exile. Pas and Medes, they had joined and he had taken over Nebuchadnezzar. He had took over all the Nebuchadnezzar.
All the way to Africa.
In Ethiopia. So I'm talking about this entire, that's the most civilized world was at this point.
Mm-hmm.
He had the opportunity now to wipe out the really core of Ra in the world. Okay, and from that, good could start to be the influential source in the world instead of the Ra as the influential energy in the world. And but to get to that point, a person has to fight internally their own fear, their own block, their own rationalization, their own apathy, their own depression, self-hatred, self-bitterness, self-unconfidence. To do this, you're fighting in your own little mind, and look what a person can create by finding those own little inner places. And she becomes Esther for posterity, for inspiration, her own eternity was born at that moment. Her Megillah Esther is born at this moment. I mean, she makes this decision. Now, there's still more work she has to do, but the birth of it is coming out now. The birth. You know, before she was in the womb, she's being birthed now.
It's like it says, that one deed, your next deed, you have to be very careful with your next deed, because it could destroy all of the world, because the world is like a cell. Whatever you do, the next deed could
But the point is that the world is designed, the greatness out of that, instead of being afraid, is that the world can be the world is designed by Hashem, so we can be partners with Him. He wants us to be partners. So we, when partners in creation, she's helping recreate, she's creating the world now, right? She's partners in this creation. And when we go into that deepest place of pain or fear or whatever it is in our own life, and we take Hashem in there, then we actually can, that's like the embryo or the source of becoming partners with Hashem. And then you take Him into every place else. And you contribute to world destiny. From that aloneness with Hashem, you can change the world. It pours all the meaning into the world, into our own individual choices and actions, from the smallest choice to the largest choice, you know, to big things, little things. Each individual was brought here to contribute to the totality of the Bria. Each individual has contributed to the totality of the Bria. Each one of us. And you know, as we look at somebody in the street, you know, whoever it is, from, not from Jew, non-Jew, they can contribute to the Bria. Now, a Jew obviously has much more responsibility and much more opportunity, spiritually and physically, in the world to do that. But every single person has a place in contributing to the Bria. Every single human being, and Hashem guides the situation completely for our benefit. So, a broken way, an illness, a difficult child, whatever the situation in life is there for our benefit to contribute to ourselves, to that person, and to the Bria. Everyone. And he wants us. And this brings us back to the concept of Malchus that we started in the beginning. What is Malchus, which Esther epitomizes? Malchus is contributing to caring for the world. Right? That's what real Malchus is. Royalty, a person who's supposed to be in a leadership position, is supposed to be helping others to bring the world to a higher place. To bring people to be independent. And that's what the Kodesh Baruch Hu is doing with each one of us. He's giving us free will choice, which is why you said before, there's no choice. There is choice. Hashem made us independent. He wants us to choose good. But He gave us the choice. So He's helping us by guiding us to become Malchus, the ability to make a difference in the world. He wants each of us to make a difference in the world, which is what a leader is supposed to do. And each one of us has leadership qualities and leadership capabilities. And whether we're, sometimes we can only be leaders over ourselves. That's the situation. And sometimes we are leaders over other people, with other people, helping other people. And that in turn is leaders in the world as a whole. Like here, Esther becomes leader of 127 provinces. But through her choices and her change in the world, she becomes a partner with the Kodesh Baruch Hu. And this is the ability to make a difference in the world, which is what Malchus is, making a difference in the world, pouring meaning into life. And so the key to this happiness, to the opposite of this apathy and nothing matters and this bitterness, is that I have an ability to make a difference. I have the ability to change the world, to make a difference in the world. And it's through the small little things in my own little head, to my own little actions, that could make a huge, vast difference in the world, whether you realize it or not. And is it like the disease of our generation today? The disease of our generation is this apathy and nothing matters, I can do what I want, da da da, you know, and they do whatever they want, right? Futility of life, bitterness, anger. The chutzpahness of life is that nothing really matters. And that the cure to that is knowing that the whole world, every moment, is really fraught with meaning. every single moment had meaning, and that every stone, every syllable, every challenge had meaning, and you make a difference. And then you start to look at Hashem differently. You see the love of a Kaddish Baruch Hu every step of the way. That really Hashem loves you, loves everything, loves you, and wants you to become Malchus, wants you to become independent, wants you to become a strong, vigorous, contributing human being. And he wants you to connect to this bigger picture. And I'll end here anyway. But it's the idea of seeing this bigger picture in the world. And even with your own little place, a little tiny thing that you're working on inside, whatever could actually be the thing that's changing the world as part of the contributing to the Bria.
What act of partnership would there be, let's say, in children who are taken into convents in the time of the war, and they were brainwashed into believing that they were Christians, they were baptized and lost to their people? Or Lo Aleinu, kids at 13 years old who were taken as cantonists, and because of the rigorous conditions and the brainwashing again and whatever else, the tortures they went through, they were lost to their people. In other words, all of the things we're talking about today are, there's so many positive things that one can do to bring out your emuna, your avodas, Hashem, etc. But there, it's to a degree almost beyond a free choice. When you're, you know, taken in at 6 years old and 5 years old and the lives that they led, and the only thing I can think of is that's part of the plan, and there's no...
You're answering the question.
Activity.
We don't know what...
Abraham was only a guest for 3 years. Mm-hmm. After 3 years, he was taken to the state. Avram was a very great person.
Tremendous. I mean,
okay, so what does it say?
No, but he did. He was an adult.
1 second.
He did a tremendous
thing. I know that, but I want to answer you. But at the end of 3 years, where he's just starting out his new life.
But he still did a kid.
No, right.
His neshama will be in Shemayim,
but,
I mean, in the
incredible
place.
1 second. I read that it says that Avram Avinu discovered Hashem when he was three.
Right.
What happened to the first 3 years of Avram Avinu's life?
He gave him over to
Hashem. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But he had to recognize Hashem for 3 years. And it was him, of course. And after that, he finished his task giving.
Okay, you know, I was just...
With the neshama of Avraham
Avinu. Right. Somebody I know has... So you're saying that these people could be neshama, that they could go to the...
We don't know.
Kind of
neshama. Yeah.
But
the idea...
Neshama is that they
have to be taken on a high...
No.
You know, but...